Blog Talk Radio.
That song is Jailbreak by AC/DC. Pamela Smart used to be the DJ for a rock and roll show. And today we're going to try to do a jailbreak in the sense of talking about releasing Pam from prison, because Pamela Smart has been in jail now nearly 30 years. Think about that, nearly 30 years. And the four young men who murdered her husband, Greg, are all out of jail. She wasn't there. She wasn't at the scene. And just for a recap, and if I get anything wrong, we have some notable guests that will correct it. But just for an introductory recap, this case was really big. It was the first televised court case on Court TV, gavel-to-gavel coverage. It was sold through the sexualization of Pamela Smart. When I was living in Pennsylvania at the time, and I remember with one of my, I'm also a musician, and with some guys from a band I was playing with, we were walking by a newsstand where they got all the magazines, and they had these pictures of Pamela Smart on the magazines, People Magazine, those type of magazines, tabloids, National Enquirer type magazines, and they had pictures of her in a white bikini, and she's a very attractive young woman, and like another friend, Donna Rice, you know, the bikini shot to sensationalize the story, and, you know, of course, us as men carrying our guitars, for one thing, it's a pretty woman, it catches your eye, but for another thing, as a filmmaker dealing with color theory and framing shots, when something's white in an image, your eyes are drawn to it. So she's in this white bikini. So from the get-go, it's salacious, it's sexual, right? And then there were books out with titles like Teach Me to Kill, and basically the public narrative that was on all the tabloid shows and such was that she's this sexy teacher at a school, and she seduces a young man in the school into an affair, who's this virginal, innocent angel. And then she manipulates him as the femme fatale and Black Widow and controls him through her sexuality to murder her husband. And the trial proceeds. And a deal is offered, and this is one of the things I hate about our system, is you can basically offer a deal, and people involved in a murder can point the finger at the person the prosecutor decides to point the finger at and say, hey, you guys, we won't throw the book at you if you say this is the guilty party. And poor Pam was screwed, because there's a Jungian archetype of the Jezebel femme fatale, and Dr. Pam, who's one of our illustrious guests today, will talk about that in much greater scholarship than I ever could. But there's a Jungian archetype, you know, going all the way back to the Bible and the Jezebels and all that. And there was a case in the 50s, the same thing, Barbara Graham, a pretty woman, and a bunch of guys did a murder, and they all got off if they'd point the finger at the woman, at the sexy woman. So the four young men who were there and killed Greg Smart, they say, oh, we were manipulated by her. She did it. She controlled us. She was the female Manson that manipulated us. And all four of these guys are out. And Pamela Smart's sitting in jail right now. Sitting in jail. Our illustrious guest, Dr. Eleanor Pam, has mentored her. She's a professor, and she has helped Pamela getting several master's degrees in prison. I think one's in literature, one's in law, I think one's in Bible, but I might not have all that right, but I think that's what it was. She'll be joining us in just a moment. Wow, what a story. We have a change petition on the radio link below you, and you can click on that online petition if you want to sign to free Pam Smart. I just signed it this morning. We have 6,200 signatures. The goal is 7,500. You can click that link if you're convinced by what we're going to present to you today, which will not be the tabloid narrative. Some of you saw that film, To Die For, Nicole Kidman. This was inspired by Pamela Smart. It was a dark comedy, although to the people that are on today, I'm sure it's hard to find much humor in the tragedy of what's happened. But it was the breakout role for Nicole Kidman, and that's the kind of sensationalism that's been out there. We're fighting a uphill battle because the initial images that register in the brain when you see something like this, particularly if it's sexual, there's all kind of dopamine and chemicals, and the brain sees that pretty girl in the white bikini, and she's the femme fatale and the Black Widow. Most people don't question the narrative of the media that they're handed. They don't think through that, and they don't ask the tough questions that we're going to ask today to try to get more to the truth of this. So without further ado, I'll be back in about 20 seconds with our guests. And our switchboards have lit up with a ton of calls, which is great. So if you're waiting to get on the show, please be patient. I've extended some grace to go much longer than we normally go. I mean, normally this show is like 30, 40 minutes, but we're going to go as long as we need to go to get you all on to talk about this because there's so many people calling in right now. We're in Hollywood, California. It's currently 11 a.m., but a lot of you in New Hampshire and affected by this case, and in other parts of the country, it's East Coast time. I think that would be, let me see my math, about 2 p.m. But we're going to be willing to go much longer than we normally go to make sure you all can get in. So I'll be right back. We have Dr. Eleanor Pam, and at the very outset here, we're very blessed to have Pamela's dear mother, and I just wish I could give her a big, big, long hug because God bless Pamela Smart's mother and her family, what they have endured for these 30 years. I'll be right back with our guests and more on the Pamela Smart case. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Richard Rossi Live. We'll start with our announced guests. We have others holding. But we'll start with Dr. Eleanor Pam. Welcome to the show, Dr. Pam.
Thank you, Richard, and thank you for your very excellent introduction. I especially appreciated your introductory remarks about how the media sold this case through the sexualization of Pamela Smart. I'll hit a couple of points that you mentioned just to clarify.
Mm-hmm.
Pam's got a Master's of Science in Law, and her
mm-hmm.
GPA was 4.0, which is a total
wow.
A score.
Can't do any
graduated,
better than that, can you?
Cannot do better. Summa cum laude from the Southern California University for Professional Studies in 2001. Her second master's, both of these she studied with me, was a
Ooh.
Master of Fine Arts in English Lit. Again, a GPA of 4.0, summa
Ooh.
Cum laude, class valedictorian, Mercy College, May 2003, which was 2 years later.
In Mercy
so,
College, that's a Catholic school, right?
Yeah, but it's a non-secular school.
Okay. May I also ask you, I'm just curious, Dr. Pam, to do a degree in jail, you can't go to the regular classes and everything. Is there?
That's right.
Does she listen
yeah.
to lectures on tape or how
no,
does that
no,
work?
No, 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 no. She's got nothing. In fact, when I first got involved with Pam, which was in the first year of her incarceration at Bedford, which was 1993, I was in very good standing with the superintendent, that in lay language, that's the warden. I had a lot of good social relationships with her and a lot of the administrative staff through, I was a professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and I had a PhD, and all kinds of stuff, and so I was an honored guest whenever I came to the campus. As soon as I announced that I wanted to be involved with Pam's education, because Pam had asked me if I'd be her academic mentor, I became on the spot persona non grata. And my relationship with the superintendent was terminated instantly. And the former niceties and perks that I had enjoyed when I came to the campus, such as she always came out to visit with me and would sit with me in the visitor's room and meet with whatever inmate I was talking to at the time, or we'd have lunch, or we would socialize, and all of that ended. And I suddenly became the object of extreme hostility, not only by her, but by the prison and the staff. So it gave me a taste instantly of what Pam was going through. So to answer your question, when I asked formally if I could be Pam's academic mentor, I expected to be treated like all the other academic mentors in the prison, because there was a whole prison program for education. I couldn't get an answer. I wrote and I called and I tried in every possible way to get a response. So it was clear that she wasn't saying yes and she wasn't saying no, but de facto it was a no, which meant that I could not avail Pam of the normal tools of teaching that inmates enjoyed at the prison. For example, I didn't have a classroom. I didn't have chalk. I didn't have an eraser. I didn't have a textbook. I didn't have a pen or a pencil. I didn't have books. I had none of the normal tools of teacher-student relationships, which meant that I came as a normal visitor. I was searched, and everything that I had on me, like all other visitors, was taken from me. So I had nothing to teach her with, except myself. So Pam and I would sit in this very noisy visitor's room on hard plastic vinyl chairs with the clanging of the vending machines, the crying of the babies, the screaming of the distraught visitors or inmates, all of the noise of the guards yelling. And I would just talk to her. For 2 years, she and I talked in that visitor's room with no normal tools. So it makes me smile when you asked if we had this technology. We didn't even have the normal easy stuff, like a pen or a pencil or or a writing pad or anything. She couldn't take notes, and I couldn't bring a textbook in. So we communicated as best we could that way, and also she would call me on the phone, and that was expensive because it was reversing the charges person to person, long distance. There was a surcharge by the prison for the telephone calls. And, so that was the other way. And the third way was for her to send me her papers for correction and review by United States Postal Office or Express or whatever. And that, too, became expensive. And it's cumbersome. It didn't have the immediacy of being able to sit with somebody and look over their work in real time and talk to them.
And is she limited, Dr. Pam, in Internet access and things like that?
Well, today, in recent months, the inmates were given computers for the first time, but they don't have Internet per se. It's all, the library, whatever, and the library is not very efficient, or it's certainly deficient in most of what she needs. So it's very hard going. But as far as biblical studies are concerned, that's something she's doing now for her doctorate. And and God bless her, because she keeps going. And when she first invited me to be her academic mentor, I was kind of shocked by that request, and I thought, here is a woman who is spending the rest of her life in prison, and she still has the motivation, the inner strength, the intellectual capacity, the goodwill, the courage to want to improve herself with education, and also she wanted to be able to transmit whatever it was she learned to others around her in that prison, and to teach other inmates and give them the benefit of her education. So I had to really debate with myself. I didn't know Pam very well at the time, but I really kind of struggled with, do I want to spend my time doing this? And actually, it was probably one of the best decisions I ever made, because I got to know this very remarkable woman as a result of that. So moving right on, and, you know, I will, you know, let you get back to whatever your agenda is. You talked about the archetype, and I always wondered why. I wear many hats in Pam's life, but one of them is as her media representative and advocate. And I always wondered why the media had such a fascination that doesn't seem to wane. Many, many spouses have killed their spouses, and nobody remembers their names. You know, 5 minutes later, ten months later, certainly
yeah,
not.
Yeah, the news cycle
almost
so
30
fast
years
that you
later.
Forget it right away, yeah.
Absolutely. So why has this case had such lasting interest by media? And frankly, I've got two more media requests on my desk that just came in this week. And it's ongoing. I have to tell you that in this entire 30 years, the media has never stopped being interested in Pam. So I had to really wonder about what was the nerve that this particular case struck. And as you mentioned, Richard, it's because Pam has come to represent the archetype of the femme fatale going way back. And if you look at the biblical references, to Eve, Bathsheba, Delilah, Jezebel, Drusilla, Potiphar's wife. And in literature, Lady Macbeth, Hester Prynne, and so on. And what are these women? Who are they? They are typically unchaste, wicked, manipulative, temptresses, and seducers. These are women who provoke men to do evil things. They lead men via desire into sin. They are cold-blooded women who bear the full responsibility for creating hot-blooded men. And the fault and the blame for lust is always on her, not on them.
Yeah,
and that's
Pam's
smart.
A very apt point. You know, there's a biblical story in the 8th chapter of the Gospel of John where a woman's brought into adultery, caught in adultery, and she's brought naked before Jesus. And the first thing that strikes me reading the story is, where's the guy? He's not there. It's all blame is on the woman, and they're ready to stone her. And, you know the classic line where Christ says, well, let him that is without sin throw the first stone. In Pam's case, the prosecutor and courts decide she's the one to stay in jail the rest of her life. Let all the guys go free.
Yeah, and that seems to be the tradition. And Pam, being a beautiful young woman, as you mentioned, is blamed for what the males in the case did. She is serving their time for a crime they committed. And what's happened with Pam is people have focused on the sin that Pam committed as if she also was capable of committing the crime, and they were readily believing that. And if she didn't have enough disadvantages just from the archetype that I just enumerated, they added on other layers. She was the older woman, for example, although that was only by a couple of years, and she was barely out of her teens herself. But worse than that, they then went to a lie, and that lie really has kept Pam down all these years, and it's been very hard to overcome, which is that Pam was also his teacher. And that he was her student. And that was never, never, never the case.
Yes, in fact, one of the sizzling kind of tabloid-ish books, as you know, Teach Me to Kill, and there's, again, the picture of her in the hot bikini, and, you know, and it's marketed, Teach Me to Kill, with the red on the word kill, and it says it's the shocking true story of Pamela Smart, the school teacher who gave lessons in love and murder. I mean, you know, totally salacious.
Absolutely. And it's, ironically, that book is the reference book for the arresting detective, Pelletier, who, when he goes on television, can't remember the case. So he uses that book as his reference, even though the book itself is false. So, but going to Die For, just for a second, that was written by Joyce Maynard. And some mm-hmm. years ago, and it's really disadvantaged and harmed Pam tremendously. The guards, one of the guards actually said to her, "I know what you did. I saw the movie." And so she's
well,
had a lot
this
of...
This shows such a lack of intelligence in the people in the prison system that can't distinguish between a work of fiction that, yes, may have got the idea from it, and he takes that as fact. I mean, you know, this shows you're dealing with some very low IQ individuals in the system.
There's no question about it. So I waited for a while, and then I decided I would write to Joyce Maynard, who was actually the author of that.
Right.
And
she wrote
I said...
the book.
She wrote the book, and I said, you know, Joyce, dear Joyce, I know you didn't intend it this way, and I know that this really is kind of a piece of dark comedy, but frankly, the person upon whom it is loosely based, Pam Smart, has suffered the consequences of your book, which then was made into a film, and I gave her some anecdotes about how Pam was harmed. And she wrote me back, and she said, well, it was never really my intention to harm her. You know, I feel very badly about it. And I said, well, would you write some kind of a disclaimer for us that we could use?
Wow.
Perhaps,
that's powerful,
perhaps.
Dr. Pam, to get Joyce herself to advocate for Pam and apologize if her fiction harmed Pam's case at all. That's, wow. Kudos,
well,
Dr.
Eight
Pam.
Years, eight years well, 8 years passed, Richard, and I didn't hear from her. Just to finish this story, and we'll go back to complimenting Joyce in a minute, because 8 years later I wrote back again, and I said, well, you said you were going to send me a letter. I haven't heard from you, you know. Do you think you might reconsider that? And she said, well, who else, you know, has been writing on behalf of Pam? And I said, well, Gloria Steinem for one, and the entire royalty of the feminist movement for another, and I'll give you all their names if you'd like. And she said, well, can I see some of those letters, including Gloria Steinem's? And I said, absolutely. So I sent them along to her, and within 5 minutes of receiving them, she sent me a letter, which we use now for the governor and for the petition for Pam, saying that it was never intended to be Pam Smart, you know, or her family, that this was not anything but a work of fiction. And so we got the letter from Joyce that we wanted, and we have used it. And she has also gone on television on occasion and given interviews that are favorable to Pam. So now I'm going to let you praise her, because I interrupted you for a second just to give you the end of the story.
Wow. That's powerful. You know, I can't salute you enough. You've been a champion in identifying the root cause of how the woman is thrown under the bus when she has the scarlet letter on her back, but also I'm getting these kind of high-profile people. Speaking of which, and I want to apologize to you all, you know, Murphy's Law, we start this show, and lo and behold, here out here on the grounds, you know, the yard people with their loud blowers show up right as we start the show. Hopefully they're done soon. I'm trying to simultaneously chase them off with their loud blowers and do the show here, but hopefully it's quieting down. But we are just so touched that here at the very outset, Pamela's mother has called in. And so please stay with us, Dr. Pam, through the whole thing if you can, because we'll keep going back to you. But I wanted, since you're patiently waiting, to welcome to the show Pamela's mother, Linda. Linda, can you still hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Richard, and I don't hear any blowers, so don't worry.
Okay. I was a little worried about that. They're pretty loud out here. There's a big battle about these loud leaf blowers. Julie Newmar, the actress that played Catwoman, has been in court trying to cut down on all the noise with all the leaf blowers out here in California. But I just give you, again, a big, big hug across the miles, Linda. Here you are. You bring Pamela into the world. You raise her as a little girl. You see her being this, you know, wonderful kid and student all through the years. And then all of a sudden you're caught up in not only this horrific murder, rest in peace to Greg, but then it becoming all the vultures of the tabloid media. My God, what you have been through. How's it been as a mother?
And we continue,
I mean,
we continue to go through, but she's still the same beautiful, wonderful young woman that she always was. But she's doing good things. Sometimes God puts us in places that are very difficult,
mm-hmm.
but we can always do good things no matter where we are. And I see her doing these good things. And it's
a beautiful sight. Dr. Pam told me about how she has done the praise dancing and ministered to other inmates. You know,
right.
there's I have a friend of mine out here who's an ex action movie star, Mel Novak, and preaches in the prisons, and sometimes I go and minister in the prisons, and I thought, wow, if anyone has a prison ministry, it's Pam. She does a lot to help the other women, doesn't she?
She certainly does, and she they're very proud of her, and she loves working with women and helping them, and I'm proud to see that she has positive things in her life that keep her very, very busy. I want to thank Eleanor, too, and you, too, Richard, and I feel your hug. And I wanted to just clarify a few things, and then if you have any questions, I'll be glad to answer them. Eleanor talked about To Die For, or you did, about the book.
Mm-hmm.
And I wanted to tell you that I've written a book, and it's called To Live For, A Mother's Cry for Justice. And hopefully I'll get it published. It's been a little difficult, but we'll see.
Well, that's great.
Trying.
Well, please get that finished so we can all read it. I'd all love to read
finished.
It. And you can now even put it up on Amazon yourself now without even having to wait for a year, you know, for someone else to green light it if you have, you know. I just want to encourage you to finish that,
I don't know
Linda.
That I'm bright enough to do that. But in any event, I'm fussy, and I want it to be the way it should be. There are excerpts in it of letters from Pam, and one fellow looked at it and he called them jailhouse letters, and I was immediately turned off. See what I mean about being fussy?
Yeah.
I would have said prison letters.
Mm.
You know what I mean? I don't want the Inquirer type person.
Well, you've had enough of that.
Editing my book. So I'll continue and I'll work hard. And I wanted to tell you about this. The picture of Pam in the bathing suit, Richard,
mm-hmm.
was taken by her friend Tracy Paris. Tracy's
mm-hmm.
still a supporter and a wonderful friend. Tracy wanted to go into modeling, and Pam wasn't interested, but she said, I'll do this for you. So they took pictures, or Tracy did. Tracy gave Pam the, in those days it was a roll of film. So Pam gave it to Flynn's landlady, of all people. She didn't know at the time, but that lady had a store, a photo store. So when this happened and Pam was arrested, that landlady dug out the old film, the old copies, and went to the police with it. So that is all in the transcripts. So it was never given to Bill Flynn, like people said, like they describe and made up.
That's a significant point, Linda, because the media put it all out there that these are the pictures she took for him and everything. And I saw
all
Tracy
that.
Give that testimony on it's the ID investigation discovery. I might have the name wrong. But Tracy's a lovely woman, long blonde hair, if I remember, and she talked about that she and Pam did those shots that had nothing to do with Billy Flynn.
Yes. And just, you know, one more thing that they blew up and gave it their own narrative to make it work for them, and it was never the truth. So that's unfortunate. And lately, we just went through to the executive council in New Hampshire, and one of the counselors said to a friend of mine, unbeknownst to the counselor, he was my friend, and his name is Andrew Walensky. He's an executive counselor now running for governor. He said to my friend the night before, quote, it would be political suicide to give Pam Smart a hearing. So,
mm-hmm.
Richard, it's always been about politics, unfortunately, and continues to be about politics.
That's so unfair.
Yeah, it's so unfair and so wrong. Yeah. And I wanted to tell you something else. New Hampshire Constitution, under Article 18 in the Criminal Code, states, and I quote, the true design of all punishment is to rehabilitate not exterminate mankind, unquote.
Amen. I agree
so
100%.
So I wrote to all the counselors when they denied her a hearing, and I asked them, please, in the way of rehabilitation, what would you suggest? And I sent the 4-page typewritten single-space letter of everything Pam's done in there and continues to do. And guess who I heard from? And I sent it to the governor also.
Mm-hmm.
Not one.
Mm.
So these are the people that are servants of the people up in New Hampshire that apparently don't give a darn, or they're too afraid, or they put their own political ambitions in front of justice. And they don't even answer you. Even a form letter I would have at least appreciated, and I got nothing. So that's what I'm up against up there.
The true
design
is
to rehabilitate,
not exterminate.
When I went into the Attorney General's office with a very legal document asking one question, who transcribed the tapes between my daughter Pamela Smart and Cecilia Pierce? We've written many times, and so has Pam, and they say the same thing. The answer is, we don't know. So I went in there with a right to know, 91A, it's called. And do you know what they did? They sent a police officer with his badge very visible on his hip to escort me out. Remember, I walked in there myself like anyone can. I'm a citizen. I have a right to go in the Attorney General's office. The officer looked very sheepish, and I thought he didn't know what was going on. I just assumed. But when he opened the door, there were three doors. You just open them and you enter. He opened the first door, and he said, "May I say something?" And I said, "Of course." And he said, "The people murdered your son-in-law are monsters." And I was beginning to cry because then I knew that he knew what they were doing to me. And I don't think he liked it either. And I said, "You're right." And then when we got to the second door, he said, "May I say something else?" I said, "Yes." And now I was beginning to cry, but not from anything he said, just because of how they were treating me. And I said, "Yes." And he said, "I'd like you to take care of yourself. I see these things happening all the time in here." And I looked at him, and I said, "You're a fine young man to care about my well-being."
Mm.
And I said, "I'm going to leave now. Don't cry, but I'm going to drive away until it's safe." And I went home, and I was very angry again. You know, nobody should be treated like this. No one. Everyone has a right to information. And now I'm very pleased to tell you that the ACLU in New Hampshire, as well as 1, 2, 3 newspapers in New Hampshire, are suing the state because the state holds, it used to be called the Lorry List, it's now called the Exculpatory Evidence List, of bad police officers who have either lied or done something illegal, and they're on a list, and there are over 200, and they've redacted some of them, and they give up the list, and they should, and it's a right to know again for people, and hopefully they'll be successful, but they've moved it to the New Hampshire Supreme Court, so I guess we'll see. It's a bunch of, unfortunately, good old boys up there, and I'm afraid of the outcome.
Mm.
And I'll stop talking in case you have any questions.
Well, I know we have callers calling in with questions, so Dr. Pam and Linda, Pam's mother, if you can stay with us, we'll get to those. We'll just take a quick break to check our messages coming in. You can send messages to richardrossilive@gmail.com or just call the number on the screen there. Which I believe is 347-637-2379. We'll be right back with Pamela Smart's mother, Linda, and Dr. Eleanor. Pam, and your calls, questions, and comments, and possibly questions for Linda or Eleanor. We'll be right back.
Born
I was thinking about that song, Jailhouse Rock. There's a story in the Bible where the apostles were in jail. They were innocent, but they were put in jail, and an angel shook and rocked the jailhouse and got them out. And I don't think I've ever prayed a prayer for someone in jail on the show before, but I really would like to say a prayer for Pamela to get free and ask all of you to put your faith and belief along with mine that there could be a Jailhouse Rock, or we play the AC/DC song Jailbreak, that somehow God will work. And I'm going to say a prayer here and then we'll get to your calls. Heavenly Father, I read in the Bible in Matthew 25 that what Jesus said, when I was in prison, you visited me. And they asked, Lord, when were you in prison? And he said, when you did this for the least of my brothers and sisters, you did it for me. I want to thank you for Linda and Eleanor and all those who have been merciful and kind to Pamela while she has been in prison. And I do pray that you will move miraculously, even if it's a miracle, in changing some of the physical circumstances, changing the hearts of politicians, governors, whatever it takes, that you would allow her to be back home with her mother, Linda, who's on the line here today, and the time on earth that is given to us, that they would be able to have time of fellowship and freedom. We know it looks, in man's eyes, very hard, but that nothing is impossible. So we do pray you'd rock the jailhouse and somehow do a miracle and get her out. She's been in long enough, and we pray for a miracle. We have your calls coming in, and I pray that prayer. Amen. There's a bunch of lines lighting up like a Christmas tree, so I'm going to call your first six numbers. I won't give away, of course, anyone's full phone number, but just to cue you who's going live with Pamela's mother and Dr. Eleanor Pam. Your area code 603, and your first three digits are 717. You are now live on Richard Rossi Live, area code 603-717. Who is this? 603-717, can you hear me? Hello, 603-717. Hello? Getting a lot of feedback there. I can't hear who it is. Okay, I guess we might have to come back to you. We'll give you one more second. Area code 603, first three digits, 717. I don't know if we're on speakerphone or a bad cell phone connection. We'll have to come back to that one. That one's not working too well. So let me go to the next line. Area code 727, first three digits, 894. 727-894. Let me see if that one's working. Area code 727, first three, 894. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can hear you, Richard. This is Amy.
Who is this? Amy?
This is Amy.
In Florida?
Newman, I went, yes.
Okay, Amy hosted a rock and roll show with Pam, if I remember right. You were DJs together, right?
That's correct. At Florida State University, we did Metal Madness on V89.
Metal Madness, wow. Well, you know, my late brother was one of the best heavy metal guitarists ever, Pete Rossi. You can YouTube him, and you'll enjoy some of his heavy metal playing.
Yeah.
But, so did you know Pam? You met her in college?
Yes, I did. We both were communications majors.
And what was this like for you to you know, to see your friend go through all this, and all of a sudden, that must have been so surreal to see your friend on the front pages of all these papers and, you know, salacious things with the white bikini shots and everything, and accused of this. It must have just been surreal for you.
Oh, I totally thought it was not true at all, and that there had to be a huge mistake, and it was gonna be figured out, and this was just a bad nightmare. I mean, there was no way when I found out that this had happened to Pam and Greg. I mean, it was horrible, and I didn't find out.
Now, Pam and Greg started dating, they were dating, I think, when she was in college, right?
Yes, I knew both of them.
Oh, okay. And, you know, Greg, may rest in peace, is often forgotten in all the sensationalism,
mm-hmm.
and you know, my youngest brother was murdered, and I kind of feel for that side of his family. I wish his family
yeah.
would have some more clemency towards Pamela, but I feel what they're going through. But what was Greg like? That doesn't get talked about too much.
Greg was extremely sweet and smiley, shy. He was very much in love with Pam. I really didn't talk to him as much as I talked to Pam,
mm-hmm.
but he was always around because they were dating, and I would go to their apartment and study with Pam. And he was just very sweet and always, you know, gave me like an iced tea or whatever I needed. And
they were a cute
just,
couple. They were a really cute couple.
They're a very comfortable couple that seemed like an old couple. Like they were just very comfortable with each other. There wasn't any games being played. They were just very happy and very comfortable. It was really a great couple to be around.
Now, the bias of the media coverage was so inaccurate that someone like you, in any, you know, journalism 101 is, you know, get both sides, talk to someone that's known the person a long time. But here you are, someone that, you know, knew her in college, co-hosted a radio show, and they're more interested in, you know, Pam in a bikini. I mean, they didn't really like, the media wasn't beating on your door to get talk to someone that really knew her, were they?
No, but I was beating on their doors. I mean, I was calling Inside Edition, Hard Copy, all the shows that were smearing her name, which is exactly what was going on in the tabloids and everything. They were making her out to be a person that I did not know. I mean, that is not the person that they, the way that they characterized her was, her character was totally smeared. I mean, this person that everyone thinks that they think they know, they don't know her. She is one of the sweetest people I have ever met, and she is not a sexy kind of girl. She is beautiful, naturally, but she was never like the kind of rock chick that I hung out with. In fact, she was just serious about school. She was very sweet and down to earth, and she was not going out and partying like most of the people in college. She had too many jobs to do it anyway, but she was very serious and very, and I had never really met a rock chick with such great, you know, like her instincts on being a person were far beyond her age. She was just very serious about life and trying to help people. And she helped me a lot through college. With my grades,
what are some of the you mentioned that they misrepresented the type of person she was, that she was this, you know, black widow sex symbol. What are some of the other inaccuracies as her friend from college that the press got? What are the things the press got wrong?
Well, I mean, she was not the type that dressed sexy or wore makeup or acted like anything. She always was trying to help other people. She was not a me person. And I mean, she had a show on the radio that was great without me. And when I met her, she said she had this show that she had just started called Metal Madness. And I told her that's what I wanted to be, was a disc jockey. And she was easily and quickly inviting me to be her intern, basically, or guest or a friend on the air. And then we ended up doing the show together. And then when she graduated, I continued on the radio station for another year. She just
wanted people.
And by
the way,
her
mother is online with us, too, as well as Dr. Pam, if you want to say hi to each other. I think they're still with us.
Hi.
Hi, Amy.
Hi,
how
Ada.
Are you? Nice to hear your voice.
Hi, Eleanor. Great to hear your voices.
Good.
You know,
nice to
hear
you, too, Amy. And I was happy to hear you talking about Pam's character, because I found her to be one of the kindest and most generous people I know. And
yes.
I like her a lot better than most of my colleagues in academia, I can tell you.
Yes.
She's not only sweet, not only brilliant, but giving and loving. And today, I saw her a couple of weeks ago, and she's peaceful. And she tells me that even though it doesn't look it, she's lived a very rich life, including in prison. And not only does she live a rich life, but she's enriched the lives of others. And that's what's missed about Pam. That's what's not understood about her. When they call her a nice princess, they certainly have that one wrong.
They definitely have it wrong.
Yes, they describe her in such defamatory terms in the press. They say she has shark eyes and she's a narcissist and et cetera, et cetera. And it's so hurtful to those of you that really know her. And the media creates a image of somebody that if you meet the person, it's completely different, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, that's why people like Amy are still there and many, many others. It's amazing. It would be easy to just step aside and say, I can't do this anymore, or, you know, what if for whatever reason, and they won't because they know how wrong it is. And I applaud
Richard,
them for that.
Richard, we've all become a family, all of us.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. We're all intermingled with each other's lives.
You know, someone asked me about this show today, you know, I imagine that Pam Smart has lost a lot of friends or her family. And I said, well, in one way, but, you know, there's a verse. Pam is working on her doctorate in the Bible, and there's a verse in the Old Testament, Proverbs 17:17, that says, a true friend loveth at all times and is like a brother born to stand in adversity. And I thought, you know, Pam Smart has not lost one single friend, because if she could lose them, they're not truly a friend. You, Amy, are a true friend to your college DJ partner because you have remained her friend. You know, Dr. Eleanor Pam is a true friend because she has stood with her, and Linda is a true mother with unconditional love. This is what true love and friendship is. I imagine, though, to that point, though, that you, Amy, probably had friends like, why are you still standing by her? She's guilty. And I imagine you, Linda, had people you thought were close to your family that may have scattered like rats when the light came on. And Dr. Eleanor Pam, you have even noted that the prison began to treat you bad, once you began to help her. So I imagine, was that a hard thing to go through, just the fact of a lot of people that you thought were your friends maybe just didn't really support you?
Who is that directed towards, that question?
I guess all three of you.
Well, for me, no. My own family has rallied around Pam, my children. My husband signed on as her attorney. We're all in on Pam. My husband's colleagues in his law firm, all of us.
Thank God your husband's a lawyer. That's great.
I grabbed his attention about 15 years ago, and I said, you're the best lawyer I know. Why is Linda and I hunting around to find somebody when you're right under my nose? So, you know, I'm not asking you. I'm telling you here now.
Being notified that this shows the kind of person Pam is, that she has these longstanding friends. Two other longstanding friends are now holding. So let me bring them in. Sonia is calling in. Let me see if we can get her on the line. And then Anne, please be patient, Anne. Is it Sonia or Sonia? Can you hear me, Sonia?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, and is it Sonia?
Yes, Sonia.
Sonia. Wow, you two go back a ways. You're the cute girl in the white dress with a picture with Pam, or you're both in the white dresses. That's you, right?
Yeah, actually, pardon me, my dogs are barking, sorry. We had caps and gowns for our graduation. There's numerous pictures of Pam and I going back to 82. Unfortunately,
so you knew her in high school, Sonia? You go back to high school days?
Yeah. Yes, we went to Pinkerton together, and we were both cheerleaders and in some classes together, like psychology and other classes. I was more business, and so I was taking accounting and things like that at school. But she always helped me as well as Amy for my education. You know, she was very good at school and helped me learn how to really study well. And she was always a good friend of mine. She has been all my life, and it's been
very,
very hard.
Thank God you've remained her friend through all this. Was this hard for you? Did you get any criticism of people, like, not understanding why you remained a loyal friend?
Yes, unfortunately. But people are, you know, prone to listen and believe everything they see or read in papers or on the news. You know, people don't, they don't look beyond and ask questions. And even when you try to point things out, you know, they're skeptic. They're ignorant to the facts. And
it must be so frustrating for all of you to know Pam and then to see the lies. And you probably are, you know, not to put words in your mouth, but I imagine all of you are like, if only you could sit down and know her as a person instead of this personality, this fake femme fatale personality mm-hmm. the media's created, if only you could know her as we know her. That must be so frustrating.
It is.
It's extremely.
You know, so many people have been patient. If you can all hold on, if any of you have to drop up, I understand, but I'd love for you all to just stay on. There's another person that's been holding a really long time, and I believe it's Anne. Anne Pierce.
Hi.
Hi, Anne. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes. Anne, you tell me how you know Pam.
I met Pam on our first day of college at Florida State University, and I wanted to say something that her mom had said, that she's always been the same loving daughter. And that's what really strikes me about Pam. I spoke with her last night, and she's the same good friend. She's the same caring and kind person that she's always been. She counsels AIDS patients. She tutors other inmates so they have a better life when they get out. And I had written a letter to the governor of New Hampshire explaining to him the Pam that I know. And Pam had a job when we were in college so she could pay for her long-distance phone calls to Greg. And she worked at a laundromat that was kind of on the edge of campus and on the edge of an underserved neighborhood. And little kids would come into the laundromat all the time to talk to Pam. And she would help them with their schoolwork. She would sit down with them. She would read to them. So her helping Bill Flynn and Cecilia Pierce, that wasn't her character. I mean, that was in her character. And
yeah.
I feel like it was the state of New Hampshire that was manipulated by these boys. And I don't even want to call them boys, the murderers. And they actually manipulated her vulnerability and her good nature. It wasn't the other way around. And she has always been a good person, and she never stopped being a good person. And there was nothing leading up to her knowing these people that would indicate that she was capable of any such behavior. But if you look back at some of these kids' past or these murderers' past, there might be some stories that in their past that would lead them to this. But Pam has always been the same good person.
Let me give you
they
all a
had
chance
criminal
to
records.
What was that?
Did you know they all? Hi, Sonia and Amy and Anne, and thank you. This is Linda. You're all wonderful, wonderful people.
Hi.
And we love you. Hi. All these murderers, you're right, Anne, that's what they were and are. They all had criminal records, and they were bad people that stole, broke into homes. They were on Seabrook Beach smoking and using cocaine right after they murdered Greg. Yeah, that's who they are and were and still are. They lie. It's horrific.
Yeah, and they paint them as these innocent, virginal, angelic Sunday school. They pretty much decided, you know, and that's the problem with our binary worldview of simple-minded people, is they make one person the devil incarnate, which they decided was Pam, the female Manson in their version. And these boys were like these innocent cherubs, you know. But I want to give you all a chance to answer a couple. We got some emails in, and I don't want to put these people on the phone that are nasty, but they in the screener questions. I want to give you all a chance to answer. I'm sure you've heard a thousand times the haters. But, you know, just to give a chance to answer some of these, let me read them. We have a Jim from Ohio that says, well, wasn't it a crime because she was involved with an underage boy? Isn't that, as a person that works at the school, isn't that, I can't quite read this. Isn't that, it looks like they misspelled what he said, like a predator or pedophilia. You mentioned Dr. Pam. She was only a few years older than him. And, yes, he was underage, but even if she was in trouble for that part of it, she would be out by now. But what would you all say to the painting her as a pedophile or a predator? I apologize for those hurtful words, but I'd like to give her side of that. So
that's
any of you that want to address that question.
Yeah, I would like to say that by the time she had a physical relationship with Flynn, which was very, very short-lived, by the way, he had
mm-hmm.
turned 16, which was the age of consent in New Hampshire. So, from
it?
A legal point, yeah. So,
legally, it wasn't illegal if the
no.
age of consent
right.
was
16. And they never charged her with anything like that, too. I mean,
mm-hmm.
they overcharged her anyway, but they could have thrown that in if they had a case to do so. So they
wow.
didn't.
Wow. No
he
one
was
has
old.
Ever
that's,
in the mainstream
accurate.
Media, I've never heard
that's,
anybody bring that up, that he was of legal consent
well,
age.
True.
They make it like
was
she was raping
yeah.
a first grader.
No.
And
no,
he
and
was
also,
sexually much more.
Else.
He was
right.
sexually
was
much more experienced than
yes,
Pam was.
He had a. He was not a virgin. I received a phone call from a woman that I had followed up because Fowler, who was the fourth person, and by the way, when they talk about they were all teenagers, he was 18 at the time, so he was an adult. You never hear that either.
Wow.
Fowler, but it's minor, but it's still, it's a fact, and I deal
uh-huh.
with the facts, and I had heard that Flynn had, well, first of all, Flynn had told Pam that he had an affair with someone, so she knew, and, but again, no one asked her about that, so I followed up with this woman, and I placed a phone call, and the woman returned my phone call, and I have the date, it was in 2015 in April, and I have it on my calendar, and I asked her, I said, I'm not judging you, I only want the truth. Did you have a sexual affair with Bill Flynn? Her answer was yes, and Billy lied. Okay?
Wow.
Now, because of all the publicity, people are scared, and I understand that. I don't like it, but I understand it. It's sad. That's another thing that happens in a case like this. You know, with all the publicity, people are reluctant to come forward that know things. And I follow up over and over and over.
Good for
and
you,
I
Linda.
Hope God lets me live long enough to see my daughter home. And thank you
well,
for
I
the
hope
nice
and pray
prayer,
he does.
Richard, because Pam will be glad that you quoted Matthew 2:5, and nothing is impossible with God. We know
yes,
that.
I wish she could
and
hear
I
our
have...
show because she's having so much support on this show. I don't even know if they can. The link will always exist if there's ever a way she can hear,
okay.
but there's so much support for her. Now, hypothetically, I'm not a lawyer, but Dr. Pam, I know your husband is. Now, it's been brought out just now that Billy Flynn lied about – I think it was Linda. I think it was Linda or one of you had mentioned that
me.
He lied
Linda,
on
yes,
court. I think it was Linda about the fact of his being a virgin, right?
That's correct.
So
I did.
A lot of the case rested on the testimony of these boys who copped a plea. So I don't hypothetically, I'm not saying Billy Flynn believes this or would say this, but hypothetically, if he would come out after the fact and say, you know, I lied, I was involved, I wasn't this virginal person I said on court. She didn't know I was going to do this. I've heard that the investigator, Tom Nichols, say that he talked to people at a party before the incident that talked with Billy, and he said, Pam doesn't know we're going to do this. So if some of this would come out where he would say, you know, she didn't know, I was in love with her, I was on the sexual high of being in love with Pam, and, you know, when you're a young man, and you have that that romance, that sexual energy, your frontal lobes can shut down and you can really lose it and go crazy in a crime of passion. I wanted Greg out of the way because I want to Pam to myself. And I feel really bad she's doing a life sentence for something she didn't really know was going to happen. If he would come up after the fact, is it too late because the conviction and everything's went through? Or could something like that overturn it?
Well, it would certainly overturn it, and then they would be serving the same sentence that Pam is serving. So he's not likely to do it.
I see.
Or if they could prove, you know, it would have to be a confession that would materially change the case, obviously. So if he lied about his virginity, that wouldn't do it. But it would change the way people perceived him and perceived Pam. The fact that the prosecutor hit very hard on the fact that he was this innocent young virgin, and Pam was this, you know, experienced older woman. But so that would just change the narrative a little bit. But if he confesses,
and by the way,
Sonia
dropped it, got right back in. So I just want to let you know, Sonia, you're back in with us. We were just talking, Doctor. I think that was Dr. Eleanor Pam that was just talking, right?
Yes.
Right. So you're saying that he's not likely to do that, because if Billy Flynn would say that, then he would be the one that could be doing life without parole.
Yeah, it would nullify his plea deal, which means that he would be charged as an adult, you know, and convicted for the things that Pam was convicted in his stead. And not only he would be convicted, but his buddies would be as well. So, we would love it if they would recant, but it's not very likely given their characters and given their behavior all these many years. I just want to add one other thing, that they served their time in a minimum security prison in Maine.
Right.
Pam
is in a maximum security. Close to their families. Pam was separated from everybody, friends and families, and sent to this maximum security prison. And where she was beaten and raped and had many, many, many hardships, which they did not experience at all. But worse than all, they are portrayed as Pam Smart's victims when she is their victim. And unless that swap, that realignment of the perception of this narrative is fixed, Pam is always going to be disadvantaged. They were never her victims. Young boys capable of evil, just the way the Columbine boys were evil. And people think that an adult had to be the mastermind, because no young boy is capable of figuring out how to do such a terrible thing. That is not the fact. These boys.
So the mastermind, the evidence against her was the people that copped the plea, the four boys and Cecilia, and then these alleged tapes. The tapes. We have someone that asked about the tapes, and didn't she say on the tape that to Cecilia? This is Maureen asking this question from Wheeling, West Virginia. Didn't she say on the tape that, Cecilia, if you talk about what really happened, I will go away to jail for the rest of my life? That sounds like an admission of guilt. Did I hear right that Pam said that she was kind of playing like a Columbo and going along with this conversation in a certain way to get information?
Is
there anything you all want to say about the tapes? I know you mentioned, Linda, you tried to get access to find out who wrote the tapes, and they were really nasty and just yanked you out of there.
And then Maggiotto went on TV, the prosecutor, and he slipped off the cuff happened to say, the tapes were transcribed by someone in my office, one of the girls in my office. Well, isn't that amazing? Talk about
bias.
And
he doesn't remember. Doesn't he play this BS that, I don't know who it was?
Yep.
Of course.
Well,
you know who worked for you, for God's sake. What's with this? This man is supposed to be a lawyer and tell the truth. And he said, I don't remember. I don't know who did the transcripts.
The state of New Hampshire put two of those murderers in the same cell, though that is unheard of.
That's supposed to be illegal, because they can get their stories together and conspire.
That's how they did get their stories. Latimer and Flynn were together, and two doors down was the other guy, Randall.
I want to thank you all because we have all these friends hanging on, and some of you have been quiet for a little bit, and I appreciate it. We'll certainly get to you, or you could all jump in, but one last uncomfortable question, and if you all want to ignore this, I understand. I'm not a gotcha journalist, and you've been through enough, so if you want to let this one go, that's perfectly fine with me. But we have a Lindsay in Las Vegas who is asking, for a newlywed, something must have went wrong that she got involved with this young man. I'm uncomfortable reading
yes.
this question, and we can let it go, but because
I don't want to speak against Greg's memory,
but to any
no,
new
very happy to answer
want to address that.
I'd like to talk to Lindsay. I'd answer her. Please know that, you know, there's only one person who will judge all of us. Pam's very, very sorry for having had that brief affair with Flynn. However,
uh-huh.
Greg had come home to her, and Greg had said to Pam he had an illicit one-night stand when he was away on a business trip. And she felt crushed, and I think I would have too.
Yeah, especially it was the first year, wasn't it, Dr. Pam? Or is this
Nine months into their marriage.
Now, does it make it right? No. But does it help me understand? Of course.
Yes.
And maybe it will help Lindsay understand, too.
Yes.
So her self-esteem was in the cellar. And when Flynn came around and was flattering and affirming, she felt better in his company.
Yes.
And that's how it started. She did not seduce Billy Flynn, despite all the media reports and the noise.
And I think it was
but,
you, Dr. Pam, or Linda that said it was very short-lived with her and Billy Flynn. I'm not
yes,
sure what you
short,
said that.
Yeah,
yes.
Yeah, I did.
Yep.
I did. It was very short-lived.
Was
and
that Linda or Dr. Pam?
That was me, Dr. Pam, Eleanor
Pam. Oh, Dr. Pam. Not to be nitpicky, but how long was it actually, Billy and Pam?
About 6 weeks, but it was on and off during that 6 weeks.
Oh,
she
that's
kept breaking
very
up
short.
And every time she tried to break it off,
exactly.
Flynn told her that he would kill himself. He would commit suicide. And she
was,
because she's the person
thing.
She is, it bothered her
yeah.
tremendously.
And
well,
then he began
yeah,
to
that's
threaten.
A very manipulative, narcissistic tactic. And narcissistic people in relationships will threaten suicide to manipulate the person into staying.
Well, and then he it got worse. And then he was leaving messages on her answering machine and telling her that he was going to tell her husband. And
right.
that's when she told her husband.
Right.
Yeah.
And
when
he did do that. Yeah.
She told Greg. They decided they had hard words that night. He said, "Well, I did it first, so we're even. Let's move on." And then they were going to start a family and buy a house. And a few weeks later, Flynn killed Greg because
to visit us, and they had talked to us about income and what type of house and how much they thought they could spend, the realtors that they were seeing, how we could help them. And Johnny, being my husband of 59 years, being the person that he was and is, said, "Well, you know, you don't just buy a house. You're going to need a lawnmower, and you're going to need a washer and a dryer." We all four of us sat there and talked about that. In fact, Greg came up by himself the first time, and we talked about the house and where they were looking. Yes, that's all true. Again,
well,
nobody cares.
One last
Richard,
media question from the other side that would be good for you guys to address and slam dunk on. Okay, this is Joanne. Springfield, Virginia, said that she had heard the boys claim they murdered to get $500 each from insurance. She said, "If this is true, why would there be so much insurance on a young man like this? And was there insurance?" She's asking about that. The boys, I think Latimer or one of them I'd heard, had claimed they were going to get insurance money. Please, you could address.
This is Linda, and I can answer that. During the trial, all Pam's and Greg's, they really just needed the receipts, checks. All the banking receipts were produced. There was no money withdrawn in any amount like that to any of these people, and they just discounted all of that. And what was the other question?
I guess they were asking if none of these boys got any kind of insurance payouts.
Greg worked for Metropolitan Life, and Mr. Doobie got up there from Metropolitan Life, who was the person who worked with him, and said, none of us know, I'm using my own words, but he actually said that we don't know how much insurance we have on ourselves because it varies week to week on what we sell. So no one knew. So they threw out that $140,000 or whatever they threw out, the media did, of Greg's insurance. And, you know, Pam wanted that and so forth. What,
so
Greg
was an insurance salesman.
That
was his job at the time, right?
That's yes. Right. Like his dad.
Okay.
Yep. But that,
well,
but Mr. Doobie got up
and disputed.
That's
the last of anything uncomfortable because I want to get to something
more
practical.
That's
I want to get to how do we get her out. I brought up the issue of Billy Flynn. If hypothetically in a perfect world he said something to try to get her out, and Dr. Pam said that's unlikely because it would put him in jeopardy. Is a governor's pardon possible? And any of you that are friends or family that want to answer, let's brainstorm. A governor's pardon, is that one route?
We just submitted a huge petition to the governor and to the executive council, which they barely looked at, and they unanimously rejected. So we got to come back again in 2 years. If they reject that, we'll come back again in 2 years more, and we'll keep coming back until we get her out.
Amen.
But the
and what is served in 2 years but to punish us and everybody that loves her and to punish her more? And like I said, when I wrote that letter, and it was not nasty, it was simply one paragraph, what in the way of rehabilitation would you suggest? And not to get an answer? That's ugly and rude and hateful. Nothing.
Yeah.
Zero.
Here's our big problem,
of?
Richard, and it's a dilemma that we can't solve.
Oh, okay.
She
who
does
is this?
Not, this is Eleanor Pam.
Eleanor, okay.
Eleanor Pam, which is they require Pam to confess that she's guilty before they'll even consider giving her any kind of clemency or sentence reduction. Pam has never admitted it and never will admit it because she's not guilty.
Yes.
And so they're punishing her for that. We're in a circle. They're
it's
saying
terrible.
Until and unless you do, you
it's
are there
so
forever.
It's so ridiculous. It's like you have to admit guilt, even if you're not guilty, to get any mercy. They did the same thing to Barbara Graham in the 50s, another pretty woman that the men all turned to get a plea on. And they manipulated her that if you say you were there when it happened, maybe you'll get out. And it was all a trap to get her, throw the book at her worse, and she ended up being executed. So it's terrible. How about any of you friends have been patiently waiting? I know we got a bunch of you. We got Ann and Sonia and Amy, and I may be forgetting one. How about any of you friends? What are your thoughts? By the way, I do want to say real quick before turning to friends, we have right on the radio show a link right on your screen to go to change.org and sign a petition. I signed it myself this morning to a petition about getting her out. You can go to Facebook. There's a site, Pamela Smart Trial by Media, or Facebook.com/FreePamSmart. You can hashtag FreePamSmart and see a lot of stuff online. There's a couple Twitter accounts, Twitter account at Pamela Smart and at J_4PS. There's a PamelaSmart.com. But click on the change link. I think any of you with an open mind that have listened to this show today, the vast majority of you are going to want to see Pam out because we've done an informal
Richard,
survey
is,
of our listeners.
Linda.
And now, granted, I'm in California, and it's a little more merciful and a little more liberal in terms of compassion for prisoners here. But in my informal survey of my students and Hollywood people I know, it was almost unanimous that the people literally say she's been in too damn long, she needs to be out. Now, I'm not going to lie and say they all think Pam's squeaky clean. Some of them think, well, maybe she knew. Some of them think, no, she didn't know. But here's the interesting thing. People in both camps agree, from my informal surveys, that regardless, she should be out. These guys that did it are out. She should be out. So click the change.org. And I want to turn to the friends and ask, what are some of your thoughts, any brainstorm ideas? Collectively, you're all a lot smarter than I am. What can be done to get her out?
Well, I think the fact that a lot of the feminist movement have been behind Pam speaks very loudly because, like you said, Richard, this needs to be looked at through the lens of the Me Too movement. She was vilified for being a woman, and she was the over-sexualization of Pam Smart. And I think Amy said, that's not who she is at all. she's like a funny, down-to-earth woman. Like, there was nothing, she was not a overly sexualized woman.
And is this
I think
or
we
Sonia?
Need to realize, this is Anne. The Boston Globe did an article about how women are often to blame for the crimes of men. And I think that, you know, the media, who is partially responsible for putting Pam in prison, they need to speak out and say something isn't right here. Right. So I think,
you mentioned
it's the
Me Too movement,
Anne.
Elaborate a little bit more on how the Me Too movement, a different climate, would maybe be a new lens to look through this, because Me Too has made people a lot more aware of the over-sexualization of women. Could you elaborate just a little more, Anne, on how the new climate you think can help?
Well, I think that if this was the other direction, first of all, if it was a male that worked in a school system, this would never even have gone to trial, right? Men who have worked in schools have slept with, you know, people in the school for years, and it's been ignored. But because she was a woman, the story changed. You know, I think it was a radio station had a Pam Smart contest of dress up as Pam Smart. That would never have happened to a man. I think this entire trial really was about her being a woman and the state of New Hampshire viewing her as Hester Prynne. My daughter actually wrote a story about Pam in 10th grade comparing her to Hester Prynne.
Oh,
and this
I'd
was
love
a girl who was
that.
15 at the time who could see what the people of New Hampshire can still not see. So I think that's, you know, where we need to maybe focus some of the energy on how this has been looked at differently because she is a woman.
Yes.
And this is Eleanor Pam, but the very first book assignment that I gave Pam was The Scarlet Letter. And I told her then that she was Hester Prynne. And I have to tell you that when she read that book and she clicked and it resonated tremendously with her and she understood what had happened to her just from that one insight.
Yeah,
I always refer to her as the Scarlet Prisoner, actually.
Wow. Yeah, and
and I tell her that
Pam, novel.
Pam, you've been wearing this Scarlet Letter for 30 years now.
Yes.
And she has.
And once that Scarlet Letter's on you, it's really hard to get off because most people won't relook at the case. How about some of the other friends? Some of you have been really patient and just hanging on the line. Amy and Sonia, any other comments?
Richard, all I can say, this is Sonia, all I can say is that they've condemned her and they've given her this barbaric sentence and they won't look back until she admits to something she never did. And so we're fighting so hard to get her out, and people need to understand that she is truly the victim in all of this. And Greg, of course, no.
Definitely.
Well, this is Anne. I was just going to say, we all loved Greg. We loved him.
Yes.
And if we thought for one second that Pam had anything to do with this, we wouldn't be on this phone call. We wouldn't have been her friend for the last 30 years because we all loved Greg.
Exactly. My husband was his pallbearer, and he believes in Pam too. My daughter, my son have been to visit Pam. They love her. They know her. We just wished her – wish me happy birthday with all of us on the phone together. And, you know, she's the same person I've known for 33-plus years now. And she's never changed. She's never wavered. She's so supportive. She's so honest and kind and caring. And I don't understand why the media has ever – why I believe that the media portrayed her this way, but poorly, but – they're the ones that are going to get her out eventually here because they have to see the light that they're the ones that condemned her.
Well, it's interesting your daughter doing this paper. Yeah, it's interesting your daughter doing the paper about Hester Prynne and Pam because that novel, Scarlet Letter, is set in the Puritan culture. And the Puritan culture looked at everything as black or white. It was either of God or of Satan. You were either saved or lost, heaven or hell. And so once they give the scarlet letter, that person gets endowed with all the judgment of that puritanical culture, that this is the evil woman, this is the seductress, this is the femme fatale, this is the Jezebel, this is the woman caught in adultery. And so the society loves to heap on her that archetype and judge her as this woman. And I think that you've all done an excellent job today. By the way, Amy, I don't think we've heard from you for a while, and you've been patiently hanging on. Amy, why don't you check in and let us know any thoughts before we have to wind up?
I think that one of the biggest status parts is that everything that has been on television, except for Captivated, which was a documentary, has not really shown Pam the way she really and truly is. They don't show her character. They don't talk about all the things she does. Barely do they hit on it. And how much work she does and what a great person she is. And this has marred her character or messed up her character so badly that nobody even cares to know what she's like, but they don't talk about it. They don't express who she really is. The media, they still try to get the sexy parts of it and to get the ratings. And it's obvious that that's what most television shows are doing, is trying to get ratings. And they're not really trying to show the truth.
Yeah, in the sex and the white bikini gets the clickbait. You got the white, the eyes are drawn to the white, the sexy picture. Just put up the white bikini picture if you want a lot of clicks.
Yep. Right. Richard,
I'm
going to send
you. We had someone that called in and we lost them. You were a 441 area code, and we'll have to wind down soon. So maybe we'll get a last thought from everyone. And if the 441 person, if you're still listening and you want to call back in and squeeze in. But why don't we get a last statement from everybody? I hate to run because I think I've listened to just about everything on the case. I've seen the movie Captivated. I've watched the ID documentary. I've read everything I can. And I think we've done one of the best jobs of presenting a group of people that have known her all these years. But I'd like to give you all one last maybe summation, your final words. I will start with Dr. Eleanor Pam. How about you? Why don't you give us your final last words to our listeners? And also, if any of you have any ideas on how to get her out or what our listeners can do to help free Pamela Smart, if you want to include that also, but anything you'd like to tell our listeners in closing. How about you, Dr. Pam, first?
I'll just say that Pam Smart is a beautiful soul, and she is the soul of that prison in Bedford Hills.
Beautiful, beautiful. How about you, Linda, Pamela's mother? Any last words to our listeners or anything you'd like to tell them,
yes.
Anybody, people that want to help Pam?
Well, first, thank you very, very much, Richard, for keeping Pam's story alive. I wanted to say, if there's a forensic investigator listening by chance, mm-hmm. Roger Fossum was the medical examiner. And, Richard, when I hang up, I'll send you a picture, and if you choose to put it on your site, you're welcome. It's a picture of Roger Fossum with his right hand and his left hand showing the entrance and the exit on poor Greg's head. And Flynn is left-handed. He said he was standing in front, in front of Greg, and he shot Greg. And the other fellow, Rando, said that he was holding a knife to Greg's throat in front of him, and Flynn was behind him. Flynn says he was standing behind Greg. And when you look at this and you put together that Flynn was left-handed and you try to figure out how this could occur, he said, Roger Fossum, the medical examiner who's now deceased, it was almost impossible. So I'll send you that picture. And as I say, if there's a forensic person listening and he or she is interested, I'd like to hear from them. And you would too, I'm sure. Thank you again very, very much.
Well, thank you, Linda. And For those that don't understand the forensics, what does that mean in terms of what do you think happened that, that people don't understand?
Okay, it would mean that Randall shot Greg, and guess what? Pam didn't have an affair with Randall, so it would never make sense, would it? So Flynn had to say he did it. And when you look at the picture, you'll have a very difficult time knowing that Flynn is left-handed. He's standing behind Greg. He states under his statement during the trial testimony, and it doesn't add up. It really doesn't. But you decide.
Wow.
But that would be
well,
you.
Thank you, Linda.
Yeah.
Okay, and how about let's go to our friends. I believe we have three friends left on the line, which is Amy, Ann, and Sonia. How about you, Amy? Any last words?
Well, I want to thank you also, Richard, for doing this show, and of course everyone who's on the line right now that is sticking up for Pam for all these years, and it is because we do know that this is not Pamela Smart or Pamela Rogers or whoever you want to call her. She is not the person that has been portrayed in the media. She is a wonderful, kind person that deserves to have a life, and you just really want to get her out of there. And if Greg was still alive, he would be horrified that she is where she is.
Well, thank you so much, Amy. And how about you, Ann? Any final words to our listeners and any thoughts on for those that want to help Pam get out?
Well, I totally agree with Amy that Greg would be beside himself if he knew how this played out. But also, you know, when I talk to doubters who believe they know exactly who Pam is from TV shows and movies, I tell them, I said, I know her. I said, if I told you that your mother, your sister, or your daughter did something like this, you would know. You know that person. You would know that they were not capable of such things. And I hope that kind of resonates with people when I tell them that, because we've all known Pam for a long time. We know her better than how the media has portrayed her, and she's not anything like what, you know, they were trying to say she was. It was all lies.
Mm. Wow, that's powerful. And how about you, Sonia? Want to have our last word, Sonia?
I want to say again as well, thank you to you, Richard, for doing this. And I couldn't agree any more with everything that's been said today. I can only say that people judge, and they should not judge unless they know the facts and unless they know the person. And this, it's time for Pam to be released. And enough. We've been dealing with this for 30 years almost, and it's been hell on her family and her friends. And if the murderers are walking, why can't she be out? What is the harm in letting her go? She is no threat to anyone in society, and she is a wonderful human being that per the Constitution of New Hampshire should be redeemed and not persecuted like this.
Mm.
I don't know.
Well, thank you for all of your eloquence, and I want to encourage you listeners to click on the change.org petition, change.org. It's on our website there for the show, /p/free-wrongly-convicted-pamela-smart-free-pamsmart, pamelasmart.com, or you could probably go to change.org and just search Pamela Smart, I imagine, to sign the petition. The goal is 7,500 signatures. It's at about 6,200. I signed it myself today. Could the president pardon her? Do any of you know?
No, he can't. It's a state prison.
No, that's
state
federal.
Prison, okay.
Yeah.
It has to be, who does it have to be, the governor?
It has to be the governor, yeah, and the executive council.
Well, if this governor won't do it, let's get him out and get another governor in there.
Amen.
Maybe one of you could run for governor. We're going to do this by hook or by crook. Oh, I'm sorry. There might be some cost listening. I'm not encouraging any of my friends there to break her out and do an escape from Alcatraz. I didn't give you that idea, but...
Join our army, Richard. We need another soldier like you.
Oh, well, I tell you what. I just hope and pray that God gets her out the way he got the apostles out when the angels rocked the jail in the Bible and the apostles got set free when they were wrongly convicted and they showed up at the door and it said a young girl answered the door and saw the apostle Peter and said, and slammed the door. It can't be you. You're in jail. So I pray that by one way or another that, and I tell you, you know, all of you, it speaks volumes that you've all known her so long from high school days or college days, and you're all in her corner and for all these decades. The media never shows the a big group like you all and how much you believe in her. They'd rather sell, you know, sex sells. But
right.
This speaks
yeah.
volumes, all of your testimonies today. It really does. And I thank all of you for calling in and doing this show.
Thank you very much, Richard.
Well, God bless you all, and I want to say God bless all of you for listening today. And again, take some action. Jesus said, when I was in prison, you visited me. And they said, we didn't know you were in prison, Jesus. And he said, what you did to the least of my brothers and sisters that were languishing in prison, you did it for me. So sign the change.org petition. If any of you are in the field of law that maybe want to give some assistance to Dr. Pam's husband, who's a lawyer, or forensics, or any field that could help with this effort, please contact Dr. Eleanor Pam. You can Google her and contact her. And let's pray for a jailbreak in one way or another that God does something to get this this woman out. She's been in her 30 years. Thank you for listening today, and please share this link for those who didn't get a chance to hear it live.